We have gone through three foundations of mindfulness. That is, contemplation on the body, contemplation of feelings, and contemplation of consciousness. So today we come to the fourth and last foundation of mindfulness, which is contemplation of Dhamma objects. I use the word Dhamma objects because the word Dhamma here cannot be translated. In Pali, the word Dhamma has many meanings, and in different contexts, it has different meanings. And one meaning of the Dhamma is something that holds its intrinsic nature, or that holds its characteristic, or that has its own intrinsic nature, or that has its own characteristic. So according to that definition, anything is the Dhamma. Consciousness is Dhamma, mental states are Dhamma, material properties are Dhamma, so everything is the Dhamma. Then, why do we not translate it as contemplation of all objects? Because that would be too wide or overpowering. So in order to understand what Dhamma object means, we have to glance through the content of this subsection. Now if you look at the handout, you will see that in this section Buddha taught first the five hindrances, the five mental hindrances. And then five aggregates of clinging. And then six internal and six external reasons. And then seven factors of enlightenment. And last, the four noble truths. So these mental hindrances and so on are called Dhamma objects here. And there is no word to cover just these five kinds of dhammas. Now, it is usually the dhamma object is usually translated as mind object or mental object, but that is not accurate. if we take mind object to mean mind as object, then among the dhammas taught in this subsection, there are not only mental states but material properties as well. And if we take the mind object to mean object of mind, then body, feelings, and consciousness are also objects of mind. So, however, in whatever way you translate, you will always need clarification. So, since we have to make a clarification, whatever translation we use, I prefer to use the word Dhamma object. So, in this section, Buddha taught the contemplation on Dhamma objects, or contemplation on five mental hindrances, and so on. So, the first five called mental hindrances, because they are states of mind and they hinder progress, they hinder attainment of jhana, and they hinder attainment of enlightenment. So they are obstacles to attainment of concentration and so on, or blocks the progress. And they are wants, sense desire, two, ill will, three, sloth and torpor, four, restlessness and remorse, and five, doubt. So there are said to be five mental hindrances. But actually, number three is a pair of two, sloth and torpor, and number four, again a pair of two, restlessness and remorse. So there are actually seven mental hindrances. These mental hindrances arise in our minds when we practice meditation, or when we do not practice meditation. Even when we practice meditation, these can arise in our minds, and when they arise in our minds, they hinder our progress. Now the first one, sense desire, means desire for sense objects. So it covers all forms of lobha, all forms of desire. So attachment, craving, and desire for material things, desire for prosperity, desire for progress, desire for success, desire for property, desire for power, desire for wealth. There is no end of desire. So any desire is called the sense desire. Even desire for nibbana, desire for attainment, is also called sense desire here. So there are some people who think that there can be no desire for nibbana, or desire for nibbana is not called desire. It is called something else, because desire is an unwholesome mental state, and as an unwholesome mental state, it cannot take nibbana as object. That is true. But when we desire nibbana, before we really attain nibbana, the nibbana we desire is not the real nibbana. We cannot take the real nibbana as object. So when we say, I attain nibbana, we take nibbana as object. But that nibbana is not the real nibbana, simply because we have not attained it yet. So it is a name for that state, or a concept of that state. So that name or concept can be the object of desire. And it is explained in the commentaries that such desire is pursuable. That means such desire is not there. As I have told you many times, this desire to attain nibbana or to attain results that motivate us to practice. So it is good to have this desire, but it is good before we really get down to practice. When we are in sight of the practice, and this desire becomes an obstacle to concentration, and so care has to be removed. So any kind of desire is sense desire. And the second one is ill will. Here also, ill will covers all forms of anger, So, anger, hate, disappointment, depression, and also dissatisfaction, and also fear. And fear is included in dosa, or ill will. The other forms of ill will are called aggressive dosa, and fear is called passive dosa. So, this dosa, or ill will, in its many forms can arise even when we practice meditation. Sometimes we are angry with ourselves while meditating, or we are angry with a person who makes noise, or persons who make noise, or we are angry with the weather because it's too hot or too cold, or maybe we are angry with maybe food. Or we are angry because we cannot concentrate, or we are depressed, we are discouraged. So all these forms are the forms of ill will. And when any one of these forms arises in our mind, we cannot concentrate. So it is an obstacle to concentration. So when there is ill will, or any form of ill will in our mind, and we have to do something about it. And number three is sloth and torpor. Sloth means dullness of consciousness, and torpor means dullness of mental states or mental factors. I don't know the difference in English between sloth and torpor. But sloth and torpor is the translation of the Pali word thina and nigha. So thina is defined as dullness of consciousness, and nigha is defined as dullness of mental factors. Although these two are separate or distinct mental factors, they always arise together. They arise when we lack motivation, when we lack effort, when we lack energy. So when sloth and torpor are in our mind, we become lazy and we become sleepy. So we have experienced sloth and torpor many times. During meditation, sometimes we nod, and so that is a sign of sloth and torpor. So when there is sleepiness, we cannot practice meditation. So it is also a hindrance. Number four, restlessness and remorse. Again, they are two different mental states. Restlessness. Or sometimes it is translated as agitation. Restlessness is the mental state that cannot be squarely on the object. And so it is shaking above the object. So sometimes we try to be mindful, or we try to concentrate on an object, but our mind seems to be a little removed from the object and wavering or shaking above it. So that kind of state is called, in Pali, udhajja, restlessness. Udhajja literally means shaking above. So when there is restlessness, there is also ignorance or delusion in our mind, and so we do not see the object clearly. at that moment. Our mind is not only meditation object, and it is not only other objects, but just shaking or wavering above the object. So that kind of state is called uddhaccha or restlessness. So when there is restlessness, we do not see the object clearly, so we cannot get concentration. And restlessness arises when we make too much effort. And remorse. Sometimes we did something wrong in the past. And we feel remorseful for it. Sometimes we did not do what is right in the past. And then we are remorseful for not doing the right thing. So remorse has two kinds of objects. Wrong things done in the past or right things not done in the past. And this feeling of remorse can be a nuisance to the practice of meditation. When it comes to our mind, we cannot even sit calmly. We are remorseful, and we are agitated, and so we cannot concentrate on the object. That is why it is called mental hindrance. So these are actually two distinct mental states. Restlessness is one mental state, and remorse is another mental state. They may arise together, or they may arise separately. But whether they arise together or separately, when they arise, we cannot practice meditation, we cannot get concentration, and so they are called mental hindrance. And the last one, number five, is doubt. Quite often we have doubts when we practice meditation. Sometimes we have doubts about even the Buddha, whether Buddha was a real historical person, whether Buddha really lived in India 2,500 years ago, or whether he taught the Dhamma as we have it today, or whether Dhamma is correct, or sometimes people doubt whether there are community of disciples who have attained enlightenment following his teachings. But sometimes there is doubt about the efficacy of his teachings. Do they really lead to cessation of suffering? But sometimes people doubt about the practice. What am I doing here? They ask themselves. Or is it true that just by paying attention to the object, we can remove the mental hindrances, or we can remove other mental defilements? But just by paying attention, we can gain insight into the nature of things and ultimately attain enlightenment. But sometimes there is doubt about the ability of a teacher, whether the teacher is really capable of teaching us or leading us through the practice and so on. So doubt may come to us in many forms while meditating. At other times, we may do some other things to remove the doubt. We can read books, or we can have discussions with knowledgeable people, and then remove doubts. But when we are practicing and we have doubt about anything, then the only thing we must do is to be mindful of that doubt, or take that doubt as the object of meditation, or make mental notes of it until it disappears. So long as doubt is in our mind, we cannot hope to really meditate at all. So these five or seven mental states are called mental hindrances, or five mental hindrances. What to do regarding these mental hindrances, Buddha said, "Here in monks, when such desire is present in him, the monk knows there is such desire in me. Or when such desire is absent, he knows there is no such desire in me." So when there is such desire in our mind, we must know. That means we must make a mental note as a desire. So we must know it when it is in our mind, it is present in our mind. Then we make notes of this sense desire, and then after a few notes, it will disappear. So when it disappears, we must know that such desire is not in us, or there is no such desire in me. So when the desire arises, we pay attention to the desire, or take desire as an object of meditation, or make mental notes of it, and then it disappears. So when it disappears, we know that it has disappeared. He knows the reason why the arising of non-arisen sense desire comes to be. He knows the reason why the rejection of arisen sense desire comes to be. So that means he also knows, or he is also aware why, or for what reason the desire comes to be, that the desire arises in his mind. And the cause of the arising of this desire is said to be unwise reflection. That means taking impermanent things as permanent, unsatisfactory things as satisfactory, non-soul things as soul, and non-lovely things as lovely. So taking impermanent things as permanent and so on is called unwise reflection. Because of this unwise reflection, such desire arises in us. If I understand a thing to be really impermanent, really unsatisfactory and so on, I will not have desire for that thing. Now I have desire for that thing because I take this thing to be permanent, I take this thing to be lovely or beautiful and so on. So taking things to be permanent and so on is called unwise reflection. So because of that unwise reflection, sense desire arises. So when sense desire arises, I try to be mindful of it, or make mental notes of it. And that mindfulness of making mental notes of the sense desire is called wise reflection. Through making mental notes, through being mindful, I am able to remove the sense desire. So the reason why the sense desire which has arisen disappears is my wise reflection, my taking desire as object and making note of it. So with regard to sense desire, we must know these things. And also Buddha said, he knows the reason why the non-arising in the future of the rejected sense desire comes to be. That has to do with those who have reached the highest state of enlightenment, who have become arahants. When a person becomes an arahant, he is able to get rid of mental defilement once and for all, so that they will not arise in this mind again anymore. So after becoming an arahant, the man will know that because of the attainment of arahant, there is the non-arising in the future of the rejected sense-desire. The rejected sense-desire can arise again in the minds of those who are not yet arahant. I may be able to reject the sense-desire now by mindfulness, by the application of mindfulness. But at another time, I may have a judgment for this thing. So, the rejection or removal of sense desire by vipassana does not last long. But the rejection or destruction by attainment of arahantship is permanent. That means once rejected or once abandoned, once destroyed, he will not arise in again. So we must understand in this way with regard to sense desire. When it is present in us, we must know that there is sense desire in us. And when sense desire is absent, we must know there is no sense desire in us. And we must also know why the sense desire arises. And also we must know why the sense desire which has arisen comes to be rejected. And with anger and also others, we must know in the same way. So when there is anger, we must know that there is anger in us. That is why when we are angry, we make noise as anger, 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 anger. Now, there is a very thin line between the contemplation of consciousness and contemplation of dharma objects. Now, when we are angry, and we make note as angry, 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 we are probably doing the contemplation on consciousness. Because when we say we are angry, that means we have a state of consciousness accompanied by anger. But when we say anger, 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 yeah, we are pinpointing on the anger itself, and so we are doing dharma object contemplation. So depending on how we know it, it can be contemplation on consciousness or contemplation on dharma objects. So, with regard to ill will or anger also, we must know when it is present, and we must know when it is present, and we must know why it arises, and we must know why it disappears, why it is rejected after arising, and if it doesn't become an arahant, we must also know why the rejected ill will never arises again again. So the same with the other mental hindrances, sloth and sorrow, restlessness and remorse and doubt or not. Remorse is sometimes considered as worry. But in the commentary, the laws of kukkucha is defined as regret for something wrong that has been done and something right that has not been done. So it is more remorse than worry. Worry may include other states as well. So these are the five mental hindrances, and we have to deal with these mental hindrances just by paying attention to them, just by making notes of them, just by being mindful of them. So when we are meditating and one of these mental hindrances arise, and we are just to be mindful of them or make mental notes of them. But when we are out of meditation and we have self-desire and others rising in our mind, then we can do some other things. Like when we have self-desire, we can practice mindfulness of the body part, the development of the body, and so to get rid of self-desire and so on. And if we have ill will, we can practice loving-kindness meditation and so on. But when we are practicing vipassana, and these mental hindrances arise in us, the only thing we must do is to make them the object of vipassana meditation, or to be mindful of them, or to make mental notes of them. So the second subsection, the subsection of five aggregates of clinging. Now I have explained the five aggregates of clinging before having on the first day. So when Buddha analyzed the world along with its living being, he analyzed it into five aggregates. The aggregate of matter, of feeling, of perception, of mental formation, and of consciousness. In any living belongs to the aggregate of matter, and living beings belong to all five aggregates. So we human beings, as living beings, are composed of a combination of these five aggregates. Now, the word aggregate. The aggregate means a group. But even one particle of matter, there are 28 kinds of matter. Even one particle of matter is called an aggregate. One thing is called aggregate. One perception is called aggregate, one mental formation, one type of consciousness is called aggregate. Now, the main aggregate of in Pali, Khanda, is given to those that have the wisdom in the present, past, future, internal, external, gross, subtle, high or low in quality, difficult to perceive and not difficult to perceive. So if any of the states has the one of these divisions or these divisions, then that state is called an aggregate, although it may be just one state. So aggregate does not mean many states put together, but just one state which has division into past, present, future, and so on. So every one of the material properties every one of the mental formations and every one of the types of consciousness can be called an aggregate. An aggregate of matter means material things in our body and also material things outside. Aggregate of feeling is the feeling which is mental. I've explained feeling yesterday. And then the aggregate of perception is the mental state which makes mark of the object we experience, so that we recognize it later. So that is called sanya in Pali, and sanya is translated as perception here. And then the aggregate of mental formation. The Pali word for it is sankharakhanda. Now, with the word sankhara, we need to be careful. Because the Pali word sankhara allows some kind of ambiguity. The word sankhara has the meaning of both active and passive. Sometimes we must understand it in the active sense, another time we must understand it in passive sense. And it is not easy to decide whether active is meant in a particular context or passive is meant. In active sense, it means something that produces, something that makes when conditions are met with. And in its passive sense, that means something which is made, which is produced when conditions are met with. Now, in the famous or well-known verse in the Dhammamala, it is Sabbe Sankhara Anicca. All sankharas are impermanent. Do not understand that word sankhara in the passive sense. So, all sankharas means all things that are conditioned, that are made, that are produced. But in the dependent origination, that is the Samubhara, there is a link between ignorance and formation, and that is avijja paccaya sankhara. So in that case, we must understand sankhara in its active sense. So sankhara there means dhamma, and that means something that produces, something that makes. So karma produces its result. And so there, karma is called sankhara. Now here, the fourth aggregate is called sankhara khanda, the aggregate of sankhara. Here, the sankhara to be understood in the active sense. So, mental state that makes. Actually, among those that are called sankharakhanda, there is karma. There is cetana of volition, which is karma. And so, strictly speaking, that cetana of volition is what is called sankhara. But still, this group of mental states is headed by cetana or sankhara, the whole group is called sankhara aggregate. And here, since karma is sankhara, we must understand the word sankhara in its active sense. Along with karma or cetana, there are mental states and attachments, anger, delusion, confidence, understanding, concentration, mindfulness, all these are called sankhara. So there are altogether 50 mental states that are called aggregate of mental formation. So maybe for want of a better word, the English translation is formation. I think the word formation is also ambiguous. I don't know what formation means. Something that forms or something that is formed. Whether we use the English translation or the Pali, we must understand the true meaning of the Pali word. And the last one is aggregate of consciousness, that is the consciousness which I described yesterday. The consciousness is the awareness of the object. That's the mere awareness of the object. And consciousness is that the forerunner of mental state, or leader of mental state, simply because other mental states cannot arise without consciousness. Because when there is no awareness of the object, there can be no attachment to the object, there can be no contact with the object, there can be no understanding of the object. So, although they arise together, they arise at the same time, consciousness is said to be the chief, to be the leader of the other mental state. So here, aggregate of consciousness means just the consciousness and not the other mental state. The other mental states are included in aggregate of feeling, aggregate of perception, and aggregate of mental formation. So among the five aggregates of feeling, I hope you remember why they are called aggregates of feeling. That means they are the object of feeling. And feeling, there are two kinds of feeling. Attachment or craving and wrong view. So those aggregates that are the object of clinging, objects that can be clung to, are called aggregates of clinging. So there are five aggregates of clinging, and among them, the first one is matter, and the other four are matter. Among the other four, the first is mental state or mental factor, the second is one mental factor, and the third or the aggregate of mental formation consists of 50 mental factors, and the aggregate of consciousness consists of consciousness, which is divided into 89 or 121 in the Abhidhamma. So when a yogi experiences the aggregate, how it seeks to observe them. Now the Buddha says, here in Imankun, this is material form. This is the arising of material form, or this is the cause of the arising of material form. This is the passing away of material form, or this is the cause of passing away of material form. So this is how a monk understands the first aggregate, the aggregate of matter, or aggregate of material form. So more than that, he knows this is material form, or this is matter. This much is matter, and there is no more. So understanding in this way is the understanding as this is matter, or this is material form. then he understands and he knows the arising of material thought. So as he pays attention to the material things, he will not fail to see their arising, they are coming up, they are arising. And also, if he pays attention to them, he will not fail to see their disappearing. So, a monk, when he pays attention to the material form or matter, he knows that this is matter or this not is matter, and he knows the arising of this matter, and he knows the disappearing of this matter. The same with the other aggregates. So when he concentrates on feeling, he knows that this experience of the object is feeling, and this much is feeling, and there is no more. And he also knows the arriving of this feeling and disappearance of this feeling. So when a monk or when a yogi is aware of feeling as pain or pleasure, he is doing contemplation on feeling. But when he takes feeling as this is an aggregate, this much is feeling, and there is no more, then he is doing Dhamma object contemplation. So he takes the same object, feeling, but in the contemplation of feeling, he concentrates on the particular kind of feeling, as painful feeling or pleasant feeling or neutral feeling. But when he, like he says, contemplation of Dhamma object on feeling, he takes feeling as an aggregate. So this is the feeling aggregate, and also he sees the arising and disappearing of this aggregate. And sometimes he may see perception in his mind, and then if he understands it as just this is perception and there is no more and so on, then he practicing the contemplation of Dhamma object on perception. And on mental formations and concepts is the same thing. So when he takes consciousness as object, then he understands here that this much is consciousness, this is consciousness, and there is no more. And he sees the arising of the consciousness and disappearance of the consciousness, and he is doing contemplation of Dhamma object on consciousness. But if he takes consciousness as object and he knows this consciousness is with lust, or this consciousness is without lust, and so on, he is practicing contemplation of consciousness on consciousness. So there is a thin line between contemplation and feelings of contemplation on consciousness on the one hand and contemplation on Dhamma object on the other. But in actual practice, we are not to find out what contemplation we are doing. We just need to be mindful of the object at the present moment. And if we are mindful of the object at the present moment, we are doing fine or we are doing the right thing. So, with regard to five aggregates of clinging also, we must practice mindfulness. We must be mindful of these aggregates as they arise and disappear. Now, the next section is section on six internal and six external bases. Actually, they are the five aggregates of clinging, stated in a different way. So the eye and the visible form, the ear and sound, the nose and smell, the tongue and flavors or taste, the body and tangible objects, and mind and dharma objects. So these are called bases. So the first column consists of internal bases, and the second column external bases. We are called bases because we are the bases for the consciousness to arise. So for the seeing consciousness to arise, it needs the eye and it needs the visible forms or something to see. When there are no eyes, seeing consciousness will not arise. And when there are no nothing to be seen, seeing consciousness will not arise. So they are bases or platforms for seats for consciousness. So the ear and sound, nose and smell, tongue and taste, body and tangible object, and mind and dharma object. Here dharma object is different from the dharma object in the name contemplation of dharma object. Here dharma object is some mental state, some material properties, consciousness, mental factors, and nibbana also. So here, among the 12 bases, nibbana is also included. But among the 5 aggregates of clinging, nibbana is half. Although nibbana is included in the dhamma object, in the 12 bases, in the context of vipassana, we have to exclude nibbana, because nibbana is not the object of vipassana. It is the object of past consciousness, or it is the object of attainment, it is the object of enlightenment. So when we are talking about vipassana, we always exclude those that belong to the mundane sphere. So although nibbana is included in the dhamma object in the 6 external bases, in this particular context, we have to exclude it. So when we see something, there is the seeing consciousness. And when we concentrate on the seeing consciousness, sometimes we notice the eye, and sometimes we notice the object which is seen. So when we see something, there are 3 things going on: the eye, the visible form, and the seeing. And then, if we do not practice right reflection or wise reflection, then we will get akusala after seeing it. We will see something and we take it to be beautiful, and then we will be attached to it. So the mental defilement can arise after the eye and the visible form come together, and after the seeing consciousness arises. So a yogi must understand all these. Sometimes the eye, sometimes the visible form, sometimes the seeing consciousness, and sometimes the mental defilement, which is called Satta over here. The mental defilement which arises out of the coming together of these three. And also he understands why the mental defilement disappears after arriving. That is through his wise reflection. And also he knows when he becomes an arahant, then that mental defilement or that fetter which has been rejected never arises again in his mind. So in this way, a yogi understands the 6 internal and 6 external bases. the yogi may not be able to name these, that this is the eye, this is the visible form, and so on. But if he pays attention to the seeing or to the eye or to the visible object, he knows that this is the eye, this is something to see, and this is the seeing. And also he knows that now, because I have unwise attention, there is a feather. So now I watch this, feather, and now it has disappeared. That is through wise reflection, this is actually mindfulness of paying attention or making note of the object. So in this way, the yogi practices contemplation of Dhamma objects on six internal and six external bases. So we are not to search for these internal or external bases and so on, but we are to be mindful of just what comes along, just what is dominant at the present moment. So we are not to try to find out whether we are practicing on the five aggregates or 12 bases or 500 bases or whatever. So in practice, we just try to be mindful of the object, whether mental or physical, which is dominant at the present moment, and we do not try to find out which contemplation we are doing, or which kind of object we are observing. And what is important is to observe the object when it is present. Because if we fail to be mindful of the object at the present moment, clinging arises. Clinging comes in. And so when there is clinging, there is action, and when there is action, there is reaction in the form of rebirth and suffering. So in real practice, we just try to be mindful of the object at the present moment. But if we have knowledge of these things, we may realize or we may be aware of some, which will be a particular name. So whether we understand them or we are mindful of them with their particular names or not, what is important is just to be mindful. So with mindfulness, we can come to see the arising and disappearing of these objects, arising and disappearing of mental and physical phenomena. And when we are able to see the arising and disappearance, we will be able to see the impermanence of things. When we can see the impermanence of things, we also see the suffering or unsatisfactory nature and non-soul nature of things. So, whether we are at a lower stage or in a higher state, what we do as a meditator is just pay attention to the object at the present moment. That is why teachers always tell their students, their meditators, just to be mindful or just to make notes. So making notes or being mindful is the beginning, the middle, and end of this practice. So you do not stop being mindful until you reach the end of this practice. So mindfulness is what is important and essential. And so we try to develop mindfulness, we try to be mindful of the object at the present moment. And this is contemplation of Dhamma objects as five hindrances, five aggregates of clinging, and the six internal and six external divisions. So we have to go two more things to finish the contemplation on Dhamma objects. Okay, thank you. Now let's share a merit. So sharing of merit is letting other beings get sense merit themselves by having them rejoice at our merit. And by sharing merit, our merit increases, because sharing of merit itself is an act of merit, which is dana, giving. So now let us share merit. Please repeat after me. May all beings share this merit, which we have thus acquired, for the acquisition of all kinds of happiness. May beings inhabiting space and earth, deities and others of mighty power, share this merit of ours. May they long to such the teaching. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.